Get ready to march like this. Get ready. Here we go. We're going on a bear hunt.
Going on a bear hunt.
We're going to catch a big one. A great big enormous gate. We can't go over it.
We can't go under it.
We got to go through it.
Thank you.
The Great Gate of Kiev by Mazorgsky, bringing us to the interval of this Brahms family matinee. Matthew Khoury conducting the Royal Philharmonic with the leader Thelma Handy, and performing with them here at the Royal Albert Hall, the Liverpool Philharmonic Children's Choirs. They're doing all the actions as well as singing, and the young players of In Harmony Liverpool. Poet and storyteller Michael Rosen is taking us on a bear hunt, and it's fitting to have that piece by Mazorgsky taken from his pictures at an exhibition, as we have pictures in this prom too being drawn in front of our eyes by the illustrator Tony Ross and projected on giant screens all around the hall. We still haven't met a bear yet, although the smoke of the little train puffed up into a huge bear shape in Tony Ross's picture. Very scary it looked too, but the second half of the concert will be taking us to the Hall of the Mountain King, thanks to Grieg. For a spin through Moscow with Shostakovich, we'll be meeting wild Russian dancers from Tchaikovsky and lots more besides. But while the families here head off in search of ice creams, there's no chance of Michael Rosen taking any time off. He's been magically transported to the middle of the countryside north of London to continue the bear hunt. But this time, it's a bear hunt with a difference.
Well, that bear's only a bear in a book. Where I've come now, there are three live, real bears. I'm at Whipsnade Zoo, looking at three European brown bears in their enclosure, which is a beautiful old wood. I can see hawthorn trees and oak trees and lots of shade and a great green pond over there where I think the bears like going. And people have come here to see them being fed. So the bears are lining up, and we're going to see what people are making of all this.
Going on a bear hunt. We're going to get a big one. I can't remember.
Something
I'm not
like that.
Scared.
What about these? Are you scared of them?
Haven't you named them?
No, we're just saying.
Yeah, I named them. That one's George. That one's Aidan. And that one's Jeffrey. I've named them.
What's your name?
Hello. My name's Tanisha.
Tell me about these bears.
They're really brown.
What colour did you think they might be?
I thought they would be white.
Thought they would be black.
Yes, I think you can get black bears and white bears.
Yeah, because we went on a trip where and there's this black bear, and I named him Tubby.
Oh, right. Where was that? Where was the black
bear? Urban Safari Park.
Yeah, and have you seen white bears?
Polar bears. I think they were polar bears, but some polar bears are black, actually, surprisingly.
Now, it's not just me who's up here today. I'm also being joined by a couple of my colleagues.
Here comes our presenter now, Steph Baker. We're going to find out more about these bears.
Now, has anybody here had their breakfast yet today? Stick your hands up. Oh, there's a few of you, a few hungry adults, I think, here and there. Adults, remember to eat something, but don't eat the bear food, because our lovely ladies down here haven't had their breakfast yet today. They're really hungry, and you can see they're all waiting patiently for their food.
I'm Steph Baker. I'm lead presenter at ZSL Whipsnade Zoo.
And do bears eat more or less anything?
Pretty much. You will find them foraging through bins for old McDonald's wrappers and things. They will eat anything they can get their hands on. You will even find these bears in the winter when there's not much about, up on mountainsides turning over rocks to find moths and things. So even tiny things they'll eat. And then anything up to the size of sort of deer and larger animals as well. And all this bit at the front where there's grass missing had grass until a few weeks ago, and suddenly the girls went mad digging it up looking for things, so I'm not sure what was in there, but they were definitely sure there were insects or something under that grass, so they took it all up. So that's all their work, digging up all that grass and making it bare again, so they could find their dinner.
But this business of coming into towns and foraging in bins, is that happening more and more? Are they doing what foxes have learned how to do?
Yeah, they're becoming a lot more urban in areas where people have built up around their habitats. And it's because people are building further into their natural range. You know, it's much easier for them to come into a town and raid a bin than it is to go out and hunt for the day. So they'd much rather just wait till the evening, wait till everyone's gone to bed and raid their rubbish than go out and try and buy some food for themselves. They are a massive opportunist, so they'd rather go for what they can have than go out and do the hard work.
Hello, what's your name?
Anya.
Have you seen bears before?
Yeah.
Where have you seen bears?
Well, as Raphael said, in the safari park. I've seen them on loads of holidays when I went to Spain, especially one was really big, much bigger than them.
Was that in a zoo or was that out there in the wild?
wild.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, where did you see it?
Somewhere like in the forest, because I didn't think they would be on the streets.
Hmm. In Spain?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, bears have really big jaws, and they have like much bigger jaws than us, and they don't have the same teeth than us. Not much same teeth. I don't think they have any molars. I think they only have canines.
Now, that girl over there, she said that bears haven't got molars. Can you tell me, what kind of teeth have bears got?
They've got mainly things like canines and incisor teeth. They will have very similar teeth to a molar, but they tend to be slightly sharper because they have to be able to grind up bone and to grind through meat and things like that. So they aren't typical molars like ours that are big and flat, like the herbivores, but they will have something very, very similar to ours because they're just an omnivore, so they will eat some fruit as well.
Bears and honey. Just tell us about bears and honey. Is it all a story?
They're pretty partial to honey, in fact. There's lots of bears that like it. Brown bears will quite enjoy a bit of honey if they can climb to get it. Black bears are actually better. They're more of the climbing bears. And we have sloth bears that live here as well. They're also known as a honey bear because of their particular fancifulness of honey. They really, really like it. Anything sweet is their favourite.
And do they get stung when they go for the honey? If they go to a wild bee nest, do they get stung?
They will occasionally get stung. Thankfully, it's a little bit like when your dog manages to walk through a patch of nettles at home. They've got such thick fur and such thick coats, the bees can't really get to them too much. That big, thick coat does protect them quite well from things like bees. So they tend not to get stung too much. Now that brings me to the most important question of all. What do brown bears like to eat? Stick your hand up if you can have a guess at what bears love to eat the most. Go on.
Apples.
That's a good guess. They like fruit. Anything else other than fruit? Go on. Vegetables, fruit and veg are very good. Anything else they like? Go on.
Leprechauns.
I've never heard that answer, ever. I'm not convinced they'll eat a leprechaun, but they might have a go if they can find one. Anything else? Go on up at the back. Fish. Well done. They love fish. Ours get the occasional treat of fish. Anything else? We've had fruit, vegetables, fish, leprechauns. Anything else they might like to eat? Go on. Berries. They love nuts and berries. There's one thing no one's mentioned, beginning with an M. Go on.
Maltesers.
Meat, not Maltesers, it's meat. They love meat. It's one of their big parts of their diet. They use their claws for foraging, and they're also very good at swimming, at climbing, and at running. So
the bears are kind of playing to the audience at the moment now. They're looking up longingly towards people who are taking pictures of them. So they're all in a row. They look like the three sisters. Yes, they could be in a Chekhov play. They're waiting to go to Moscow.
Now, the ones we have here are all girls. Have a look down there. Can anybody spot one with a slightly wonky nose? If you can spot one with a wonky nose who's sitting slightly on her own, that'll be Wendy. She's 22 years old this year. She's the oldest of our three. The other two are her younger twin sisters who are 20. Their names are Wellington and Winslow. Now, I know Wellington and Winslow sound like boys' names, but I can promise you they are definitely, definitely girls.
The three bears, the three sisters, waiting, and they're looking up. Their ears are quite perky. Oh, yes, the ears are pointing now towards the people who are all lining up, taking pictures, so they're posing now.
Now, I think our ladies have waited long enough for their breakfast. Are you ready to throw in the food? Oh, that was rubbish. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hey, much better. Now, before you throw it, a couple of things to remember. First of all, don't throw it at a bear. Being hit on the head by half an apple does hurt them. You will put them in a very bad mood.
So thinking about it from the point of view of human beings, which I know we shouldn't always think about animals in that way, but how dangerous are bears on a scale of 1 to 10 to human beings?
I would say very low. Definitely, if we're going for 1 being the least dangerous, I would say much, much closer to maybe a 3. They're really, really shy. They tend to be solitary, so you don't really come across them much. Even mothers with cubs, when they're very protective of them, were more likely to give a big show of aggression but then move them away. They very, very rarely go near people. The only time people really come in contact is if you've got bears that are coming into towns. And even then, the people there have lived there for so long with them, they know just to keep your doors shut, your animals indoors, make sure your bins are locked. They're pretty safe animals, really. They don't tend to see people very much.
And do they have face-offs? Are they aggressive with each other when they get to the edge of each other's territory?
Yeah, they will have a good old territory battle. It usually doesn't involve too much aggression, but they will wrestle. So they stand up on their back legs and push each other about. And there's a lot of noise, but there tends to not be too much biting because neither of them wants to get hurt. So it's just a big display of who's bigger than the other and who's stronger. And the smaller one tends to just run away from there.
It is funny the way that we've made bears into these big cuddly creatures, but, you know, whenever you see film of them on TV, I mean, they are really fierce.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to cross one in the wild. They look nice and fluffy, but they're probably not.
You wouldn't go in there, would you?
No, definitely not.
No.
Now, they've got great big thick fluffy coats for another reason. It's not just to keep them nice and warm. Brown bears can be pretty big. Can anybody guess in feet how tall a male brown bear can stand on his back legs? Any guesses? Go on.
15
feet. Now that is a pretty big bear. It's a bit less than 15 feet. Go on. 8 foot's a very good guess. It's actually the height of the tallest ever brown bear, 8 feet tall, but it's a little bit less than 8. Go on.
9.
It's a little bit higher. We need a bit less than 9. Go on.
6.
6 feet tall is a brown bear. And if they've got their dinner and a big male brown bear standing 6 feet tall comes along to steal it, they need to be able to protect it. So their fur has a fantastic ability to stand up on end. They puff themselves out and make themselves look as big and tough as possible. And that means their dinner should be kept nice and safe.
And they're sitting on their haunches, looking up at us and scanning us. I can see what they're doing is... Oh, yeah, it's interesting. They're looking across our faces. They know something's going to suddenly appear, but they're not quite sure what. Now, when you look at the bear there, can you read her face? Can you see expressions on her face?
Not a great deal. They're not hugely expressive animals, mainly because they seem to lack eyebrows. And eyebrows tend to be the thing that makes an animal have big expressions. You can tell if they're generally happy because they'll be eating, they'll be playing, they'll be swimming, rolling about. You can tell sometimes when they're a bit tired, but that's mainly because they're sort of lying about in the sun and not doing very much. And you can tell when they're angry because they tell each other when they're angry. They're quite loud. They tend to get up on their back legs a lot and show off to each other.
When you say they're loud, what noises do they make?
They growl a lot, and it's not a very loud growl. It's more of sort of a low rumble. And they do make a kind of a snarling noise. It can be very, very loud. You can hear it by the main gate of the zoo. It's very rare, and it tends to be our twins that are noisy here. Wendy stays out of the arguments. She's quite quiet.
And have you ever seen a scared bear?
I've never seen a scared bear here. But I do know that they will just literally disappear in a matter of seconds if something scares them. They can run, obviously, pretty quick, so they just vanish. And if ours don't want to be seen, if they're having a bad hair day, you just don't see them. It's not a huge enclosure, but they will just vanish and you can't find them anywhere. So my last question is to make you all find out how scary a bear is. Does anybody think they could run faster than a brown bear?
No.
No. Oh, someone down there has their hand up. There's always somebody. How fast do you think a brown bear can run in miles per hour? How quick? Go on. 30. Well done. Spot on. 30 to 35 miles per hour. So if you think you can outrun a brown bear while they're hunting, I'm pretty sure you probably can't run quite that fast.
Something very painful to see are photographs from late Victorian times of a person arriving in a village with a dancing bear. They look to my eye quite often like a grizzly, a pretty huge bear, and with a chain and a muzzle. I mean, that must have been appalling for the bear, appalling for the keeper. I mean, it's just appalling for everybody. But clearly there was some kind of fascination about the idea that you could be in a little village away from the city and suddenly this person would turn up with a bear.
Yeah. I think it's very much like lion taming. I mean, bear dancing still goes on today. It's illegal, but it still goes on. And I think it's sort of man's dominion over the animals, that kind of a feeling. You know, it's so impressive when you see a person manage to tame a huge bear or a lion or a tiger or whatever it is. But actually, when you know what's happened to that bear to make it a dancing bear, you know, they've probably removed its claws and its teeth. They've probably burned its feet so it won't put the front feet down. They've got a bolt through its nose that is probably infected and painful. Of course it's not going to, you know, do much to you. You've effectively changed it as an animal. It's become basically a teddy bear that moves around. You know, it's not what you've done. You've not had a power over that animal. You've just made it something different. Now, don't mob Michelle and Enid. They're either end of the walkthrough, so go down and grab some food. So throw it as far as you possibly can. I want to see food going into the trees if you can get it to make them forage and to climb. And if you want to go down the far end and throw it further, do feel free. Get throwing it in, everybody.
She's been very fussy, just sort of nibbling little bits off the apple. It's quite funny. It's looking a little bit like my youngest son. He sort of, when he gets an apple, he just has a little bit of it, and then he chews around the edge of it, and then says he doesn't want that bit because it's got a little bit of brown on it. And she's doing just the same. Extraordinary. Just having a little bit, and then pushing it and turning it over. So they're feeding now. People are throwing them things. They look a bit short-sighted. Are they?
They don't have great eyesight. They're much better. They're a lot like the carnivores that judge things by movements. Things like rabbits can sit in there with them and they won't see them if they don't move. So what they're actually looking for is the sight of the fruit going over. They can see that movement, but they're not great at very close-up vision. They can also rely a lot more on their sense of smell. They are smelling more for the fruit than they are looking for it.
You can judge animals that the bigger the nose, the better the smell, a bit, can't we?
Yeah, like, and they've got pretty big noses. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Their sense of smell is pretty good. And their sense of hearing is very good as well. So they sort of rely on those senses a lot more than eyesight. But when they're chasing something, they will be watching for it moving. But like I say, if something is lying on the grass next to them and it doesn't move, they will just walk over it. They don't see it at all.
So tell us about cubs.
They tend to have cubs around the warmer parts of the year, so sort of spring, early summer is generally the start of the breeding season. And some bears can actually give birth while hibernating. Things like polar bears will emerge from their den where they've hibernated, having given birth to a set of cubs, which will then quite happily suckle without mum even being awake. I believe brown bears can do it as well. Some of them will literally give birth while asleep, so they've got the right idea. And they just emerge from hibernation with a couple of cubs in tow.
Two is the usual number?
Yep, two is quite usual. You can have more. Some of them will have three, some will have one, but two's a pretty normal number of cubs.
And are they quite good at looking after them? Some animals seem to be kind of less... ducks, I always worry about ducks.
Yes, ducks don't seem to be
very good at looking after ducklings, but
no.
Bears, are they good parents?
Bears are fab parents. Bears are really, really good at keeping hold of their youngsters, making sure they follow them. And that's their natural thing. If mum's walking somewhere to forage, the cubs will naturally be somewhere behind her. If danger comes along, she'll quite readily hide them or defend them. They're very, very good at looking after them.
I think the teddy bear aspect is kind of, they're always gentle, kind creatures until you go to the grizzly bears in Canada and realise how dangerous they can be.
Well, I should think these could be pretty dangerous, couldn't they?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to be chased by one, would you?
No, not really.
I mean, like, you know, the second half of Bear Hunt where the bear's, like, chasing after them. I mean, it's quite scary, isn't it?
But, yeah. You do have that scary... It's a twist, isn't it? You kind of wonder if it's going to be a gentle bear or a scary one that's going to eat you up. And then all the children end up in bed under the covers, scared, and the bear's not there.
They've got a teddy bear there, haven't they?
Yeah.
She's just ignored an apple.
Yeah, she tends to go... They all tend to go for the pellets more than the fruit. They'll eat the fruit first, and it always goes in the order of pears, apples, then carrots. Carrots are the least favourite, but they will eat them. And the pellets, we throw them in last, but they always go for them. They really like their pellets. And they're just a protein pellets. They're a bit like a dog biscuit. They're really healthy, but they must taste quite nice. They've got nuts and things in them. So I imagine they quite enjoy those. Oh, there's one with an apple. And you'll see sometimes she's doing it. They balance it on the back of their paw, so they hold it up off the floor. If we give them oranges, they balance it on the back of their paw and peel it, so they don't eat the skin, they just eat the flesh inside. So they're very, very, they're very dexterous. Their paws are really, really good for holding things.
That's amazing. Well, I've seen great apes peeling bananas, pulling back the skin of the banana, but I didn't realise that bears could do that.
Yeah, bears can peel oranges. Very, very dexterous feet.
I think there's a book there. Bears can peel oranges. I like that. All these books that come out about, you know, my auntie is a wasp or whatever, you know, these strange books come out. I think bears can peel oranges. Wonderful. There's one bear in the pond. Grabbed hold of some bit of bark and wrenched it around. Oh, another one's coming. Might even have a little face off here. Oh yeah, she came out of the water and threatened the other one, and now she's come out and I think the other one's about to take a dive. In we go. And yes, just lowering down into the water there. It really looks very brown and green. Algae on the top, brown underneath.
Oh, that's so good.
Nose. Oh, just shaking off like a dog. Bit of a lick. Ah, the relief. You can actually see it on her face. A little bit of licking of the snout going on. Because it is hot today. A little bit of a breeze. Just sitting there, like me in the bath, hanging about for too long. Down goes the nose, under the water again. Boy, I wouldn't put my nose under that water, I can tell you. Well, that's it. Feeding time's over. They seem to be fairly nonchalant now. I think they're fed. They're not as anxious as they looked before. Well, there goes one, I think, strolling off into the shade, just glancing down at the ground in case there's one last pellet or some little extra treat. The crows are moving in again now that they're gone. Well, that's it from Whipsnade, and back to that other bear in the Albert Hall.
Thank you, Michael. Feeding the Bears was produced by Simon Elms. Well, welcome back to the Hall and this BBC Proms Family Matinee with me, Louise Fryer. Our big Proms bear hunt is due to resume in a couple of minutes, though any bears are sure to hear us coming. Not only is the stage full to bursting with players from the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, singers from the Liverpool Philharmonic Children's Choirs and the young players of In Harmony Liverpool, but the hall itself is packed with lots of excited children looking forward to part two. And I've been joined by Sandra Parr. She's the Liverpool Philharmonic Artistic Planning Director, who's been responsible for getting the whole project off the ground. Sandra, what gave you the idea?
Well, of course, the inspiration comes from the book, which everybody knows. I saw it as a one-man show by a children's presenter, and I could hear it, the music for it in my head. And so I talked to Ian Stevens, and from that we hatched between us the plan, and we played as our school's concerts. Although this evening, we're actually hearing a very much bigger version than we have done in Liverpool, so it was from the book.
Ian Stevens is the composer.
Yes, Ian Stevens is composer, and he's works a lot with us for Liverpool Philharmonic projects, writes music for a lot of our school's concerts as well.
And are you pleased with the result?
Judging by the children's faces, I think we're all pleased with the result. The children are a little bit nervous, I think, but thrilled, absolutely thrilled to be here.
And presumably it's quite a job getting it all together.
Just a few details. There's been a lot of paper flying around, thousands and if not billions of emails actually. Everybody's been very, very supportive, and I think it's just been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Sandra Parr, and we're ready for part two of this prom. Coming on to the stage in just a moment will be conductor Matthew Khoury, signer Angie Newman, illustrator Tony Ross, and our storyteller in this family matinee, Michael Rosen. All four of them threading their way through the loads and loads of players on stage, and they're all making their proms debut this afternoon.
Thank you.
Are we ready to carry on? Let's open the gate and see what's on the other side. A dark, spooky hall. The dark, spooky hall of a mountain king. Sneak in. Sneak, sneak, sneak. I didn't see any bears in the Hall of the Mountain King. Get ready to march like this. Get ready, we go. Going on a bear hunt. We're going to catch a big one.
We're not scared.
We need fast horses.
We need fast horses.
We can't go over them.
We can't go under them.
We got to jump on them.
Thank you.
run through Moscow, now out into a forest, a deep, dark forest. Bears live in forests, so let's listen to the choir singing about this forest. Now let's take a break from hunting bears. Let's dance round the world, and we'll start with wild Russian dancers. Dancers all the way from Mexico. Let's dance! We'll be right back. where should we go next? What's this? Maybe we're in Cuba, so let's do the conga. All of you. To the Conga del Fuego Nuevo. Can you say that? Conga del Fuego Nuevo. Get ready to march like this. Get ready? Here we go. We're going to catch a big one.
We're not scared.
Day.
A narrow, gloomy cave. To go tiptoe, tiptoe, tiptoe. What's that? One shiny wet nose. Two big furry ears. Two big goggly eyes. It's a bear! But wait. He's fast asleep. Shh. Don't wake him up. Thank you. Is he still asleep? Did you see him move? Oh no, he's waking up. Get away! Where should we go? Where should we go? I know. Let's go home. Through the conga! Through the Mexican dances! Russian dancers! Through the forest! Onto the horses! Into the hall! Onto the train. Under the sea. Through the pirates. Through the snowstorm. Through the mud, through the grass.
to our front door. Open the door. Up the stairs. Oh no! We forgot to shut the door. Back downstairs. Shut the door. Back upstairs. Into the bedroom. Into bed. Under the covers. We're not going on a bear hunt again.
The Berceuse and finale of Stravinsky's ballet, The Firebird, ending this BBC Proms family matinee. Matthew Corey conducting the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, the leader, Thelma Handy, and performing with them here at the Royal Albert Hall, the Liverpool Philharmonic Children's Choirs and the young players of In Harmony Liverpool. Poet and storyteller Michael Rosen has been taking us on a bear hunt, complete with illustrations by Tony Ross. He's been producing image after image in oil pastels with a few deft strokes and lots of smudging in, leaving us with a picture of a child hiding under the duvet and a huge bear ready to pounce looming overhead with the words, sleep tight. Lots of children having a great time here in the Royal Albert Hall. During all those dances, there was a wonderful conga line snaking its way around the arena, all the prommers joining in. And it's a very colourful stage too, different sections of the orchestra wearing different coloured shirts, red for the fiddles, maroon for the violas, blue for cellos, dark blue for double basses, orange for the wind, pale yellow for the brass, green for the young players of In Harmony. And in case you're wondering, In Harmony is a national programme inspired by Venezuela's El Sistema. That cheer is for Michael Rosen, making his way back onto the stage. I hope we're going to have a little more. Tony Ross stepping onto the platform, onto the podium for a moment. But he's vacated it.
We're going to have an encore for you. Yes. And we'll have some words coming down as well. Not just pictures this time. We're going to have some words. Please join in.
Animated version of The Little Mermaid, Under the Sea, the lobster Sebastian trying to convince Ariel she's better down where it's wetter than on dry land with the prince, if only she'd listen. That music by Alan Menken, specially arranged by Ian Stevens. He's done all the arrangements and composed the bear hunt sequences from scratch, you might say. Matthew Corey conducting the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic, the children of In Harmony, the Liverpool Philharmonic Children's Choirs. all on stage, live here at the Royal Albert Hall. Great to have a refreshing dip after all the antics of our bear hunt. Illustrator Tony Ross giving the term debut artist a whole new meaning. Well, we've certainly had great fun here. I hope you've enjoyed it too. Happy hunting. Back to Broadcasting House.
And that was Louise Fryer. And don't forget that every prom is available for 7 days via the Radio 3 website.
The BBC Proms focus on Polish music continues in the first of two concerts from the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra. Its new chief conductor, Wasili Petrenko, and two soloists making their proms debuts. Biba Skrida joins them for the nocturnal fantasy that is Szymanowski's Violin Concerto, with Tchaikovsky's Winter Daydreams and Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances. In the second prom, there's Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 2 with Christian Ila Hadlin and the rugged landscape of Bruckner's Romantic Fourth Symphony. I'm Andrew McGregor. Join me for the Oslo Philharmonic's proms starting tomorrow evening at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, next this afternoon, coming up in about 17 minutes' time, a choral evensong which comes from the Church of St Giles, Cripplegate. Bizet's La Lesienne Suite No. 2, played by the Toronto Symphony, conducted by Andrew Davis. BBC Radio 3. Now it's time for Choral Evensong, which was recorded in July in the Church of St Giles, Cripplegate, in London's Barbican. The service is sung by Genesis 16, a training programme for young singers instigated by the choral group 16. The Magnificat is Orlando Lasso's setting based on the Easter motet Aurora Lucis Rutilat, Lights Glittering Morn Bedecks the Sky. And the Nunc Dimittis is by Gustav Holst, written in 1915 for the choir of Westminster Cathedral. The anthem dates from the middle of the 16th century, Christopher Tye's setting of the Agnus Dei, taken from his Mass Euge Bonae. And the service opens now with an introit by James Macmillan, setting words from Psalm 29. Sedebit Dominus Rex. The Lord remaineth a king for ever. The Lord shall give his people the blessing of peace.
Thank you. Welcome to this service of choral evensong at St Giles Church, Cripplegate, in the heart of the City of London. Today we celebrate the feast of St Augustine of Hippo, who famously wrote that whoever sings prays twice. And so we come to praise God with our hearts and our voices.
O Lord, open our lips.
And the mouth shall show thy praise.
O God, make speed to save us.
O Lord, make haste to help us.
Glory be to the Father, the Son, and to the Holy Ghost,
as it was in the beginning, is now, and shall be, world without end. Amen.
Praise ye the Lord.
Choir sings Psalm 136.
Thank you.
The first lesson is taken from the second book of Samuel, chapter 19, beginning at the 8th verse. Following the death of his son Absalom in battle, King David prepares to re-enter the city of Jerusalem, where he shows mercy upon the rebellious Shimei. Then King David got up and took his seat in the gate. The troops were all told, "See, the king is sitting in the gate," and all the troops came before the king. Meanwhile, all the Israelites had fled to their homes. All the people were disputing throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing the king back?" King David sent this message to the priests, Zadok and Abiathar. "Say to the elders of Judah, why should you be the last to bring the king back to his house? The talk of all Israel has come to the king. You are my kin, you are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? So may God do to me and more if you are not the commander of my army from now on in place of Joab." Amasa swayed the hearts of all the people of Judah as one, and they sent word to the king, "Return both you and all your servants." So the king came back to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king and to bring him over the Jordan. Shimei, son of Gera, the Benjaminite from Bahurim, hurried to come down with the people of Judah to meet King David. With him were 1,000 people from Benjamin, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, with his 15 sons and his 20 servants, rushed down to the Jordan ahead of the king while the crossing was taking place, to bring over the king's household and to do his pleasure. Shimei, son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan and said to the king, "May my lord not hold me guilty or remember how your servant did wrong on the day my lord the king left Jerusalem. May the king not bear it in mind. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, see, I come this day, the first of all the house of Joseph, to come down to meet my lord the king." Abishai, son of Zeruiah, answered, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" But David said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should today become an adversary to me? Shall anyone be put to death in Israel this day? For do I not know that I am this day king over Israel?" The king said to Shimei, "You shall not die." And the king gave him his oath. Here ends the first lesson.